Good afternoon and welcome to APN Play. My name is Anjali Prasad. Thanks for tuning in. Our guest today is Mr. Wolf Mueller, Attorney Wolf Mueller. Welcome to the show, Wolf.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for coming to, for sitting with us today.
My pleasure.
Tell the viewers what you do for a living.
I'm an attorney. I've been an attorney for 30 plus years now, and I specialize in police misconduct cases, wrongful conviction cases as my main bread and butter work. Also done a lot of product liability cases in my throughout my career. I was an engineer before I became a lawyer. So those are the kind of cases that I focus on.
I invited you on the show because I read about this wrongful conviction case that you won last week. And I must tell you, I was a prosecutor for 15 years, and I thought I wore the white hat going to court. And now I'm a criminal defense attorney, and I think I wear the white hat going to court. But you actually champion people who are wrongfully convicted, not a little bit guilty or a lot guilty. They've flat out been wrongfully convicted, and you take up their cause, and you bring it to court, and you get them vindicated. And anybody in the criminal justice system must can only respect the job you do. So we appreciate you. I know there's so many lives that you've impacted because of the work you do. I want to start by talking about this case last week that you had in federal court.
That was Alexandre Ansari, a very good man. He was wrongfully convicted and spent 6.5 years behind bars before the Conviction Integrity Unit for Wayne County, which was newly formed at the time. This was one of their first cases. Discovered the evidence that would have shown he wasn't guilty and would have cast a complete different spin on the criminal trial. They discovered that. They realized that their own prosecutor had been deceived by the police officer who hid the evidence from the prosecution. And they did the right thing. Credit goes to Val Newman of the Conviction Integrity Unit, Carol Stanier, the lawyer who did all the groundwork investigation, and to Kim Worthy, the prosecutor, because that is the office that convicted him 5 years, 6 years earlier. That's a hard thing to do, to own up to. The system was broken sometimes, and a man was wrongfully convicted, and they dismissed the charges and gave him his freedom.
And from what I was reading, the wrongful conviction turned on the conduct of a single DPD officer, correct?
A homicide detective.
I've actually had cases with him before. One thing I'm wondering is whether this verdict affects cases that other people have had with this detective. I mean, is he forever impugned now because it has come to light that he basically deceived the prosecutors?
I think that lawyers, people who have been convicted who are currently in prison are contacting their trial lawyers and wanting them to look very deeply into this. You know, as you've seen, when we have bad cops, it's like a lot of things in society. You know, they talk about the 80-20 rule. I had a police chief tell me, we concentrate on the 20% of the frequent flyer criminals, right? Ones who are responsible for the majority. And when you see detectives in this case where a jury heard all the evidence that wasn't disclosed, return a verdict, they need to be more closely looked at. I know he's a defendant in another wrongful conviction case
where the
same kind of thing is being alleged. So this isn't their first rodeo.
In this instance, in your case, the detective actually admitted that he withheld information, correct?
He admitted that he did not write evidence down that people had told him and made the, frankly, incredible and unbelievable claim that it is not evidence until it's written down. It's just information, and we don't have to turn over information, which goes against all the case law, as you
right.
know. Any prosecutor, any criminal defense lawyer knows that that's not true. But that was his operating principle. And so that's how he justified not turning over critical evidence that would have, we call it exculpatory evidence, that would have shown that Alex Ansari had nothing to do with this crime.
Did the detective testify at your trial last week?
Yes. Oh, he was the principal defendant.
Okay.
And in our case, it's a legal principle under a case called Brady. It's Brady evidence. The police have to turn over to the prosecutor all the evidence that they have that shows, one, the person didn't do it, but just as important, evidence that would cast doubt on the credibility of the state's key witnesses.
Right.
And he didn't do that. And had he done that, Alex Ansari would have never been convicted because he had nothing to do. This was a series of hits, one in a series of hits called for by a major Mexican cartel leader in southwest Detroit. And my guy had nothing to do with that. No evidence. Knew the DEA had been tracking this drug lord, and there was no connection between my guy. So his theory at trial in the criminal case was, your guy must have been the hitman for the drug lord. Only knew there's no contact between these two. So he never told the prosecutor that this is a series of hits, one in a series of hits, and my guy is the hitman. What the prosecutor told the jury was, we don't know why this happened. This was a random shooting. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Right.
And she said that because she was misled by the officer.
So let's be clear. In your case, it wasn't the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office who did the wrongdoing. In fact, they got to the Conviction Integrity Unit, and they did the right thing.
Correct.
And they traced it back to the Detroit Police Department detective, a very well-known, well-established detective who
hid the evidence from the prosecutor. And what you folks listening have to understand, the way our system is set up, it is the prosecutor's responsibility to turn over all the evidence, to have a fair trial. That's what our Constitution, the Sixth Amendment, guarantees. And the 14th Amendment due process guarantees that we get this evidence. It's supposed to come from the prosecutor. But as a prosecutor, you don't know what's being hidden from you.
Right.
You're presenting the case that the police bring to you.
Yes.
So when the police, who collect all the evidence and decide who should get charged and who is not going to be disclosed, that's all on the cop. The integrity of the entire criminal justice system depends on the integrity of the police. Because if they dupe you, you don't know that there was other evidence.
Well, it does start with the integrity of the police, but then it gets to the prosecutor. And I was, as you know, a prosecutor for many years, and I can tell you that sometimes the exchange between the prosecutor and the police officer goes like this: what else do I need to know? And sometimes it goes like this: what else is there? So it's not to say that the prosecutor perpetuates the wrongdoing, but we all have a role to play, and we all bear responsibility. So in your case, it was the police officer,
right,
clear as day. But, you know, prosecutors forget that they also are not necessarily dealing with an ally when they work the case with a police officer. And the only person who it affects is the defendant, who I used to prosecute, but now I defend. So
right.
Now I'm much more aware of these issues.
You're much more sensitive to that. And let's not leave prosecutors out. There are overzealous prosecutors who are in it to win and get a conviction. And so sometimes the prosecutors don't do the right thing. In this particular case, the Conviction Integrity Unit and through our investigation revealed that the prosecutor didn't know about the evidence. So it falls back completely on the police in this case.
Yes.
Sometimes that's not always what happens.
Right. So your verdict, I think, was for $10 million.
Correct.
And your client was incarcerated for 6 years.
6.5 years, yeah.
6.5 years. So tell me, how do you come up with that calculation? Because it seems like all the money in the world wouldn't justify being incarcerated for even one day.
Well, it's interesting. I asked the jury for a total of $52 million, $26 million, roughly about $4 million per year of incarceration for compensatory damages for the harm, and another $26 million for punitive damages, because the purpose of awarding punitive damages is twofold. One, to punish the wrongdoer, the police officer, but two, more important for society, is to prevent this from happening so that other police departments who hear about a large verdict, when you get hit in the pocketbook, that's when change is made. And so that's what we did in there. These numbers, of course, they seem large. They seem outrageously large to some. But I asked the jury, open the door. On the other side of that door is more money than you can conceive. Who's going to go into prison? And Alex Ansari, like most of my clients, are convicted of first-degree murder, life without parole. You may never get out, ever. You will die a violent death, or you will die of old age, but you will die in prison. But if you do get out, Alex is lucky, 6.5 years. I've had guys 35, 42 years in prison. If you get out someday, all your family will be dead. You didn't get to raise your children or pay your last respects to mom and dad and grandma. Who would open that door? What's the number where you would open that door? And that shows when people say, I wouldn't do it for all the million in the world, or money in the world. It just shows you the significance of the harm.
Right.
Of our freedom.
Right.
And that's, it's about the process, as you know, being a prosecutor and a defense lawyer. It's not the result. It's the process that has to be protected. Due process and a right to a fair trial. I had a prosecutor once tell me, a conviction is just if it's a fair trial. An acquittal is justice if it's a fair trial. But a conviction when you don't have a fair trial is not justice and never will be justice. And that's what we have to try to overcome. And that's why these conviction integrity units and the Innocence Projects of various law schools, which are so important.
Yeah, let's segue into, we were talking about the Innocence Projects, which when you and I were in law school,
didn't even exist.
So why don't you tell our viewers a little bit about this?
Sure. People might remember the O.J. Simpson trial, especially if you're our age.
Were you in law school? I was in law school when the verdict came out.
I was a brand new lawyer.
I was in law school.
And Barry Scheck was one of the defense lawyers, and he was a specialist on DNA. And he tore up the state, the prosecution's expert.
Yes.
And the witnesses. And he and his partner in New York started the first Innocence Project, because back then, 1989, 1990 is when DNA was just in its infancy. And they specialized in DNA. And so they were able to get out a lot of people. For example, the classic one would be a rape, single-person rape. Turns out it wasn't my DNA in the victim. I wasn't there. And so they were able to get these people free, and then Innocence Projects and Innocence Clinics sprung up around the country in law schools. And these kids, I call them kids, or these students would do it. Everything's pro bono.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting paid. And they're just doing the right thing to make sure that we can correct the mistakes that have happened. And we are the best justice system in the world. But it doesn't always work perfectly. And when it doesn't, and an innocent person is convicted, people in a society need to do their best to get these people free.
And that's where the Innocence Clinics come in at University of Michigan. I think Cooley
has a out of Western Michigan University Law School, Cooley Innocence Project. Michigan was one of the first, if not the first, in the country not to focus on DNA. The DNA, if you can get the DNA and it's a rape, and it becomes definitive that I didn't do it.
Right.
It's not my DNA. The non-DNA clinics have to focus on what was the evidence, was evidence hidden. That's a much more difficult task in the typical case. And so kudos to all of those law students who, when I've told them, you know, you're going to a law school like Michigan, you're going to be a superstar. You've been a superstar your whole life. And you're going to be a superstar. But you will never do anything as important as getting an innocent man out of prison.
Yes, yes.
Ever.
I went to law school in Atlanta, Emory in Atlanta, and I worked, I wanted to be a prosecutor all my life, although I left after about 15 years, but I worked on death row clinics, and I feel the same. You'll never do anything as important as getting somebody off of death row.
That's for sure. People don't understand when the living hell that is a prison. And imagine, as we were able to show the jury in our case, you are in a 7-by-10-foot cage.
And he was in maximum security, I guess, right? Because of the...
For 21 hours a day with a real murderer, with a real pedophile, with a real violent person. And you have a toilet with no privacy. You have two beds. You have desks. You have no room to move. You know, those cells are so small that if I want to walk around in the cell just to go from the bed to the desk, you have to get up on your bunk, because two grown men can't fit in that cell. 21 hours a day. I told the jury, we had a pandemic, and we had record numbers of divorces.
Yes.
Right? By people who swore at one time to love each other for the rest of our lives.
We can't take being in those small spaces.
We couldn't even be in a small space. Imagine this is your existence. And then when you talk about what is the balance, you know, compensation, to compensate is to balance the harm. What amount of dollars would anybody take to balance that amount of harm?
Right.
And not just once you're free, that's half justice. Accountability for the person who put you there.
Well, let us discuss accountability for the person who put your client there. What happens to the detective now?
The detective in this particular case, the internal affairs of the Detroit Police Department, investigated him because of his conduct in this case. And essentially, as he testified, his union lawyer told him, you're going to get fired for what you did, or you can retire. And so he took his retirement with full pension, and he walked away essentially unscathed.
How is that right?
Right? How can that be right?
How can he walk away with a full pension?
That's just our system, and there was a recommendation for him to be criminally charged, but the statute of limitations had run. Because the statute of limitations for any of his crimes would have been 6 years.
Yes.
So because my client didn't get free for 6.5 years, there was nothing that could be done.
I have to wonder why this went to trial. Why wouldn't the city of Detroit settle the case if the detective admitted to the wrongdoing?
Well, he never admitted to the wrongdoing. He admitted what he didn't disclose, but he claimed that the important stuff he told the prosecutor. So it becomes a credibility battle between the prosecutor. In our particular case, this Brady claim that we had is, you didn't turn over this evidence that would have made a real difference at the criminal trial. You didn't turn it over to the prosecutor. So it becomes the prosecutor saying, I never got it, versus him saying, I did give it to her. And there was a memo that they were parading around that she had written after the conviction that hinted at some investigation of that Mexican drug lord.
Yes.
And that what became their calling card. That's what they decided, we're going to win this because we'll be able to show she knew it. And unfortunately, they bet wrong.
Right.
The city has settled every other wrongful conviction case, and I have several.
Well,
I don't know why they took this
trial. Insurance pays for it, right? The city's insured.
The city is self-insured, city of Detroit.
Okay.
So anything that happens in these kind of cases comes out of the taxpayer dollars, out of the general rolls.
Okay.
And I don't know why they didn't, because anybody would have made a reasonable offer. And cases like this where the exposure is so great, talking about $10 million for 6.5 years, what could a jury do with 35 years and 40 years?
Right.
And I have several who have done 25 years, a quarter century. There are people on the jury who aren't that old. I mean, weren't even born, right?
What's the longest period of incarceration that you've had a client wrongfully convicted on?
42 years.
Ugh.
42 years. I look at it, again, those of us are old enough to remember all these presidents. When he went in, Ronald Reagan was president in his first... No, I'm sorry. He went in, Gerald Ford was president in the mid-70s. When he came out, Donald Trump was president. And you look at all the presidents and all that has happened from 1974 to 2016 or 2017. It's just incredible. It's incredible.
Was that a Wayne County case?
That was a case that the Wayne County Conviction Integrity might have gotten him out too. I know the Cooley Innocence Project led that charge.
Okay. So the Innocence Projects or the Integrity Units kind of launch the case, and then they come to you?
then
generally
they have found me, and I specialize in this. I'm fortunate that people think I do a decent job.
Yeah, well, and it's good that you, yeah, it's great that they have, because bad enough to be wrongfully convicted, but how in the world can you start, relaunch your life without the means?
Without any resources. He came out at 65. He went in at 20. Came out at 65 years old. And most of us, as we're getting retirement age, we're counting on Social Security. He doesn't have any Social Security. He never worked. He was in prison.
What was the basis of his wrongful conviction? I hope not another wrongdoing by a police officer.
Well, there was the wrongdoing by a police officer, and in this case, too, a prosecutor, a Wayne County prosecutor, who browbeat and threatened another witness into implicating my client. And they promised him immunity and threatened him, if you don't say it's this guy, then you're going to get charged with a murder, first-degree murder. And by the way, there's another murder that we think you did. You're going to get charged with that.
Yeah.
So when he did implicate, that other case went away.
Yeah.
And he was given immunity to testify. And he came, after 40 years, came clean. And frankly, had come clean within 6 months of the conviction just because he felt bad. And had been writing. But as you know, the appellate systems are not designed to correct mistakes of innocence.
It's no,
to,
no.
To look at the procedure. And so he languished 42 years before Cooley Innocence Project was finally able to convince the prosecutor's office to dismiss the charges.
I have a few cases that I have sent over to the Conviction Integrity Unit. But to be clear, individuals don't need a lawyer to go to the Conviction Integrity Unit. They can, or their family members, can take up the cause and submit the case by themselves, correct?
That is true.
Yes.
But as our society understands, people with limited resources, they don't have the ability to do the legwork to get the evidence that the Conviction Integrity Unit would want, even just to start, to get them interested, because they're looking at 1,000 cases.
I was going to ask you, because I haven't heard back yet. So they must be very, very inundated with claims.
It is a small unit with only a handful of lawyers and investigators,
okay,
looking at 1,000. The University of Michigan will tell you they have 4,000 applications and law students trying to take the first cut. That just takes so long.
Yeah.
And so if they have a lawyer, the lawyer at least has been able to present the case in a way that might shortcut a lot of the
right
analysis. If you don't have a lawyer, you certainly can fill out an application, but chances are you don't have the evidence necessarily to meet the criteria,
yes,
that they're looking for.
You need
for
somebody to marshal your case,
yes,
and package it.
Right.
Yes.
And that's why these innocence clinics and innocence projects are so important, because they do the investigation, and then they bring it on a silver platter to the Conviction Integrity Unit. Now it's just like you just got the cliff notes.
Yeah.
Right? Now you can just sift through it and you know what the case is about.
Right.
So that's always huge.
Well, if we don't have too much time left, but I did want to talk to you about the Oxford School District, because I know you represent a couple of the victims in their lawsuit against the school district,
right,
correct?
Right.
Who do you represent?
I represent the family of Madison Baldwin. She was one of the four children who were killed. And also Phoebe Arthur, who was the ninth grader, who was the first person who was shot when the shooter came out of the bathroom. So I represent those two families.
And you are suing the school district, correct?
Right.
I have to ask you, are you getting a lot of resistance from the school district on this lawsuit?
An incredible amount of resistance. They're hiding behind governmental immunity. And I make a big contrast to when it comes to doing the right thing. The Michigan State shooting, that tragedy that just happened a year ago, three people were killed, and the school already has resolved any civil action with those families without a lawsuit.
Right.
They just did the right thing. They didn't have to. They could have hid behind the same governmental immunity that Oxford is doing, but they did the right thing. And Oxford is just lawyered up and listening to their lawyers and trotting out every legal defense, and so it's dragged on.
So to be clear, Oxford's not saying... Oxford's saying we are immune. They're not saying we did nothing wrong. Or are they doing both?
They're doing both. More so they are immune, and we don't want you to know what we did and didn't do. So they're dragging it, they're playing lawyer games and dragging it out so that we don't get the discovery that'll shine a bright light on it. You know, in civil lawsuits, you get to do things like take depositions, take testimony, and shine the light on the bad actors like we did in the police case. So far, we haven't had an opportunity to do that.
Well, I would have to think that probably everybody imaginable is with you on this case. I mean, we're not, I don't want to talk about the criminal case, which is starting down the road, but in terms of the liability of the Oxford School District, I would have to imagine most lay people are behind you. So thank you for taking the case, thank you for the work you do, and I hope you come back and see us again.
I hope I'm invited. It was a pleasure being here, pleasure having a conversation with you, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
You will be invited.
Right, thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to AP on Play. We'll see you next time.